You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Guaranteed to cure warts, lumbago, and make dry, brittle hair shine. All of these conditions and more treated by this one little bottle of liniment that you can buy today and today only for one thin dollar. If you heard anyone pitching a product like this, you'd probably call them a snake oil salesman. But not that many years ago, there were unscrupulous hucksters with similar lines. And sad to say, there are still companies who prey on our fears and desires. Their spiel has now gone high tech. How do we know what is safe and effective? We want the best for ourselves and our pets. Thankfully, there are governmental organizations such as the Food and Drug Administration that are looking out for us. My guest today is Dr. Carmen Stamper. She is a veterinary medical officer for the Center for Veterinary Medicine. Their mission is to protect human and animal life. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Is the coast clear?
Yes! Let's go!
Are you sure they went to Petco?
Where else would they go?
Oopsie!
Hey, calm down!
I smell presents!
Go to PetLifeRadio.com/Petco and get up to 40% off hundreds of holiday items at Petco. PetLifeRadio.com/Petco.
Uh-oh, step on it!
Okay!
Oh, not on my tail!
Petco, where the pets go.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ICE.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ICE.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at Diamond.com. ICE.com or Diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Stamper, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us on.
We've all heard of the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, but I have a feeling if you were to talk to 99% of my colleagues, veterinarians, they're going to go, see the what? So what is the Center for Veterinary Medicine and how did you get involved with them?
I have to laugh because you actually are correct in that many veterinarians don't know that FDA has a veterinary arm. And so when I attend conferences and work at our CVM exhibit booth, veterinarians come up to us all the time and say, oh, you must be, you know, where is my accreditation for USDA and such? And I have to say, no, we're the Food and Drug Administration. You need to go down the aisle and go to the USDA booth. It's pretty funny. So
and sad.
Oh, goodness. Yes. Yes. So how did I get to FDA? It's a pretty interesting route. I graduated from the Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine in 1995, and from there practiced in Toledo, Ohio, for about five and a half years, where I worked full-time as a dog, cat, pocket pet, reptile veterinarian. From there, I moved to Maryland with my husband and got another full-time job at another practice here. And it was there that I actually met a good friend who happened to just work every other Saturday. She's a veterinarian as well. And I asked her one day, I'm like, how can you make ends meet here in Washington, D.C., working every other Saturday as a veterinarian? And she started laughing. And it was then that she told me about the Food and Drug Administration and the Center for Veterinary Medicine. And of course, I'd never heard of the Center for Veterinary Medicine. So we had a long discussion about it. There happened to be a job opening that I applied for, and thankfully was able to get that job. And I've been here now for almost 11 years. The first 7 years I was here at the FDA, I actually did new animal drug reviews. And for the last 3 years, I've been on the communications staff. So it's been an interesting ride getting here to the Center for Veterinary Medicine, but I just love what I do here. It's a great place to be.
Well, you make me feel a little bit better that I'm not alone, that I'm not the only person that didn't know what CVM was. So FDA, they look at foods and medications that people are going to be taking. But in the intro where I was saying that the mission of the CVM is to protect human and animal health, how does that happen?
Well, that's interesting. And that is actually part of our mission statement, is to promote and protect human and animal health. You'd think, being a center for veterinary medicine, that we would have nothing to do with human health. But in fact, we do, because what we do is we regulate animal drugs, animal feeds, and animal devices. And as I like to tell the veterinary students I speak with, sometimes we treat the animals that we actually eat. So at FDA, part of our job is to make sure that the drugs that we're putting into food-producing animals, those drugs need to be safe not only for the animal, but they also have to be safe for people, in that people are going to be eating products from these animals, whether it's meat or milk or eggs. We have to make sure that the drugs, if there are any types of residue whatsoever, and there are legal limits for things in meat, milk, and eggs, that there are no issues with human health as well. So especially with food animal drugs that are approved here at CVM, we have a whole human food safety component that we actually have to look at. It adds another layer of complexity onto the new animal drug review process, an extra layer that the companion animal side doesn't have to really deal with.
So when I go to the grocery store and I'm looking at foods that, you know, they say there are organic or there's no growth hormones, this is part of the purview for the Center of Veterinary Medicine? Is that what you oversee?
Actually, the organics program is overseen by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, so FDA doesn't have anything to do with that. And with regard to growth hormones and such, those are things that the Center for Veterinary Medicine and FDA would regulate.
Now, I know people get so concerned with residues in our food. You know, they want to make sure that there's no antibiotics that are going to be causing problems. They don't know what may be happening years down the line. They don't want their children being exposed to these things. What does the FDA do to make sure that our food supply is healthy?
Well, that's a really good question. And like I said, with regard to food animal drugs, there's a whole human food safety component that we look at before a drug can be approved for use in a food animal. So some of the things that we look at are, will this drug potentially affect the bacteria that are living inside the intestinal tract of that food animal? Could the drug possibly produce resistance? We also set tolerances and limits for residues that can be in meat and milk and eggs. So we do make sure that there are limits, that the drugs cannot go above those limits. And if they go above those limits, there are actually screenings that are done at the slaughterhouses for those particular drug residues. And if the residues are above the legal limit, then those particular farmers who own that animal, they actually will get slapped on the wrist, and we will take regulatory action.
So taking regulatory action makes sense. You've been talking right now, Dr. Stamper, about antibiotics, medications, and such. And I know one of the real problems in veterinary medicine in my practice, there are times I want to send home a particular medication and there's sticker shock. People look at this going, oh my goodness, why does this cost so much for this drug for my pet when I can go to Walmart and get my own antibiotics and they're $4 for a month? Why does it seem that veterinary products cost so much more than human products?
I totally can understand that question, being a pet owner myself. And it's a legitimate question. And something that people don't realize is that the FDA does not control the pricing of products from drug companies. So the drug companies will basically charge what they want. And something that people also need to realize, too, is that they also need to recoup the money that they've put into the research toward getting these drugs approved. The drug approval process is very expensive, even on the animal side. On the human side, it's much, much more expensive. The animal side itself is expensive. And for example, a safety study for a drug such as a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug for a dog, those safety studies can run upwards of $200,000. So it's very expensive to get a drug approved. And so when the drug companies get their drug approved, part of the reason why the prices are so high is because they're trying to recoup the money that they put in for the research. But otherwise, FDA does not really have any say into what goes into the pricing or the company's decision to price products as they do. But I can totally sympathize with you, especially when I go and I have to go buy HeartGuard for my dog, and she's a large breed dog. Sometimes you do get sticker shock, I have to say.
So Dr. Stamper, there are oftentimes people, again, trying to save money and going, oh, these medications are so expensive. How about if I just go online? What's your opinion? What do you recommend for people that have questions about using online pharmacies?
Well, I really can't give an opinion on behalf of FDA with regard to that. But what I can do is tell people to basically do their homework before they buy online. There are many reputable sites out there, but there are also some pretty shady places that people need to be careful of. Shady in that the products are coming from another country, they're not necessarily FDA approved. And so people really need to do their homework before they go and buy online. And if your listeners go to our website, we actually have a brochure that we created to help people with regard to buying things online. And it's how to spot the red flags if you're online and you're not sure about a pharmacy.
And what would that site be?
Our website is at www.fda.gov. And click on Animal Veterinary, and that'll take you to our homepage, and you can just put into the search box AWARE. The brochure is called AWARE, and it's an acronym for the several steps that pet owners should do before buying online.
Well, I actually went to the CVM site and was not aware of all the things that you folks did. And one that I found very interesting, and this was a problem several years ago when we had this massive pet food recall.
Oh, yes, that was awful.
That you have this whole list, whole different areas on how to choose a good food and getting the right treats. And one of the things I was recently reading about in one of my veterinary journals was chicken jerky treats causing problems. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I know dogs seem to just love these treats.
Right. The chicken jerky treats are real popular products right now. And I just have to say that our website contains information about recalled products. So if owners have pet foods and they're concerned, they can go to our website to see if there are any current recalls on the product. But really, the website doesn't guide them into purchasing specific pet foods. But it does give good recall information. And we just posted on November 18th, what we call CVM update about chicken jerky treat products. And this is an update to something that we had put out as a notice to pet owners way back in 2007. Chicken jerky treats are very popular treats for dogs. And CVM, in addition to regulating animal drugs, we also regulate animal food, and pet food and pet treats actually fall under that, which is why we issued this notice to pet owners. currently what we're seeing is an uptick in the number of reports that we're getting to the center regarding dogs that are becoming ill after possibly eating chicken jerky treats.
What are some of the signs?
Some of the signs can include anything from decreased appetite to decreased activity, increased drinking of water, increased urination, vomiting, diarrhea. And we're encouraging people, if they're seeing these signs in their pets, that they need to contact their veterinarian immediately just to make sure that their pets are okay. But again, with the chicken jerky treats, we've been investigating these since 2007, and so far FDA has been unable to find a definitive cause for these symptoms that we're seeing in the animals. And so what we're doing is cautioning owners, here are the signs that you need to be aware of that we're getting reports about, and also please read the label on the product that you're feeding your pet because you may be feeding too many. And also, the most important thing actually associated with this update that we have is there is no chicken jerky treat recall. We've been getting quite a few phone calls and emails from concerned pet owners, and they're all saying the same thing. Is my product recalled? Is this on the recall list? And there is no chicken jerky treat recall currently because we don't have a definitive cause for what we're seeing, and there's no contamination that we found. There's no bacterial contamination, no chemicals that we've been able to detect in the product. So we're still looking for a definitive cause at this time.
So it might just be safer to say we don't really know what's causing it, but you might want to keep it just as that occasional treat instead of one of those treats you give every day.
Right. And if the labeling on the product should say, you know, feed as a treat only, it's not meant to replace a balanced, complete diet for your pet.
Well, I think this so far has been a nice, balanced interview. I appreciate this, Dr. Stamper. We need to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's the holidays at PetSmart, so come one and all. There are hundreds of gifts for pets big and pets small. Toys only at PetSmart, so special and new. They'll love the gifts. You'll love the value. Hurry to PetSmart today for your very best friend and save 30 to 50% before the holiday ends.
The holidays are just around the corner. Go to PetLifeRadio.com/PetSmart and save up to 30% on awesome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. So shop early and save money. Go to PetLifeRadio.com/PetSmart today.
The Boo Boo Loon Pet Recovery Collar is an innovative inflatable product that comfortably restricts pets from harming most surgical wounds, skin disorders, and obsessive licking or scratching. It's the humane alternative to the hard plastic cone and other devices. The Boo Boo Loon is easy to use and designed to be soft, fully adjustable, and pillow-like, allowing for unrestricted vision and complete freedom of movement. Sizes range from extra small to extra large. So join the Boo Boo Lution. Become a Boo Boo Buddy on Facebook or check out booboo-loon.com. BOOBOOLOON.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets.
Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to PetLifeRadio.com/Dyson. PetLifeRadio.com/Dyson to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Welcome to Bird's Eye View on Pet Life Radio. I am Dr. Lori Hess, here with Dr. Michelle Ravitch, and we are both bird and exotic animal veterinarians. We work at the Veterinary Center for Birds and Exotics, an all-bird and exotic pet hospital in Bedford Hills, New York. And this is a show all about birds. It's a Bird's Eye View, and we hope you'll tune in soon.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Stamper, this has just really been very eye-opening. And I think one of the things that was the most revealing for me was going to the CVM website, and you had this whole area on animal health literacy. I thought, oh, what's this? And there were topics I was somewhat surprised to see, such as taking care of pets in disasters.
Yes, our animal health literacy campaign is something that we're pretty proud of here at CVM, and we're adding to it and increasing the type of information we have on there. And it's basically information for animal owners, because we also, not only do we have pet information on there, but we've also got information for people who own food animals or who own horses. And it's basically our way of trying to get information out to the public about things that we regulate, about things that may be of concern to pet owners. And it's just, it's written in language that owners can understand. It's not in veterinary speak. It's not in scientific speak. It's in very basic plain language that everybody can understand and enjoy.
You were talking about non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And so many times, you know, I ask you for a Kleenex, and you understand it's a tissue, and Kleenex just a brand of tissues.
Correct.
So all of a sudden, I'll say non-steroidal, and you know, they'll think aspirin or ibuprofen. So I want to give your dog some non-steroidals, and they think, I'm not going to spend money here. I'm just going to use some aspirin that I have at home, or gee, if I use it on my dog, it must be okay for my cat. Please talk to the listeners right now about non-steroidals, how they differ, and why kitties are such special little creatures with regard to this medication.
Right. It's important for people to know that the non-steroidals that we take, the ibuprofens, the acetaminophens, and such, aren't necessarily safe for our pets, especially for cats. Cats are special critters in that their bodies don't have the right kinds of chemicals that can easily break down some of these types of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So for instance, if you give a kitty one regular strength acetaminophen tablet, you can actually kill a cat with that. So it's very, very important that you ask your veterinarian, if you're noticing that your animal, your dog, your cat, your horse isn't feeling well, that you talk to your veterinarian about what it is that you can do to help your pet. And your veterinarian will be able to prescribe things for your pet that are proven safe and effective for your pet. In other words, they've been FDA approved. We know they're going to work. We know that they're safe for your pet. So, and that goes along the NSAIDs as well. We actually have NSAIDs that are approved for dogs and cats and horses. You know, the drug companies have done testing in dogs, cats, horses to make sure that these things are safe for the animals, whereas things such as ibuprofen, they haven't necessarily been tested in dogs, cats, and horses. So you want to stick with drugs that are approved for your pet. It's very, very important.
Dr. Stamper, one of the things you kind of mentioned as your introduction of what your background was before getting involved with the Center for Veterinary Medicine is you worked with reptiles. And
yes.
I work with reptiles also, and they walk through the door, and there is no medicine on my shelf that
right.
is FDA approved for reptiles. So what's a veterinarian to do?
Actually, that's a very good question. Reptiles fall under what we consider their minor species. There are seven major species that the FDA recognizes, and those are dogs and cats, horses, cattle, pigs, oh, I hope I don't miss anybody, turkeys, and chickens, I believe. Anything else that isn't one of those seven species is considered a minor species. And zoo animals, for instance, are considered minor species. Iguanas and turtles and snakes are also considered minor species. And the reason that it's difficult to find drugs to treat these animals that are considered minor species is because there's no market for these drugs, if you will. A drug company, when they put a product out on the market, they need to be able to recoup what they're spending. So if you're putting a product out on the market for an iguana or a tiger, the drug company is not necessarily going to be able to recoup the money that they would get if they go through the approval process. So what we have to rely on is a law that was passed, and it's called AMDUCA, the Animal Medicinal Use Clarification Act. And it's a great law, and it gives veterinarians this very special privilege where we can use approved human drugs or animal drugs in species or for indications for which there aren't drugs available. And if you think of veterinary medicine and all the different types of animals that we have that we need to treat and all the diseases that they can get, it's going to be very difficult to get drugs approved to treat everybody and everything. So AMDUCA gives us the privilege of being able to use drugs that are already approved in these animals to treat their diseases. And it's based on a veterinarian's expertise. They know the animal. There are very specific requirements that have to be followed in order for a veterinarian to be able to prescribe a drug in what we call an extra label manner. And that's using a drug under AMDUCA is considered extra label because you're using it in a manner for which the drug wasn't approved. It wasn't approved to treat pneumonia in a tiger. It was approved to treat, say, pneumonia in a dog or pneumonia in a cat. So we're very, very privileged to have this particular law. Otherwise, it would really tie our hands with regard to how much we can do to help our animals.
And it's so wonderful because veterinarians, all my colleagues, are so good at sharing their information. So there are various websites that veterinarians will go to, Veterinary Information Network being one of them, VIN, where you can say, okay, I have a sick tiger, and I'm seeing this and this and this. Can anybody help me? And then you learn from colleagues, oh, I tried this or I tried that, or I had a sugar glider and what do I do with it? And what is a sugar glider? So yeah, there are really marvelous ways. So Dr. Stamper, you were talking about non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And one of the things I always try to do when I send home any medication is to give my clients a client information sheet. I almost sometimes don't want to do it because they read it and they go, oh my goodness, but it can cause this, 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 and this.
Right.
Why is it important for a pet owner to ask their veterinarian about what effects and adverse side effects they may be seeing and what type of information should they be looking for? Should they be given?
One of the most important things to know about NSAIDs is that there are risks and benefits with any drug that you give an animal. And with NSAIDs, the benefits are that we can relieve pain in our pets and give them a better quality of life. And for instance, some pets are so painful with arthritis that if they don't take the NSAIDs, the next option is to actually have them put to sleep. So there are benefits to having NSAIDs for our pets. But the risks are also there as well. And again, there are risks with any drug, whether animal or human. And so pet owners really need to do their homework when they're giving medications to their pets. And so one of the things that we do at CVM with regard to NSAIDs is that we have client information sheets created as part of the product's labeling. And NSAIDs, because I haven't mentioned this yet, NSAIDs are the biggest source of adverse drug event reports or reaction reports that we get here at the center. So the client information sheets are designed to help pet owners know what the drug is, what are the side effects that can happen while taking an NSAID, and then what do I do if my dog's having a problem on an NSAID. So it's this nice little summary sheet that's written in plain language that everybody can understand. And it's really a nice little handy reference sheet for pet owners.
So again, it's different than the insert that, for instance, when I get a medication at the pharmacy and it has this little folded up piece of paper in three font that I need the magnifying glass. And I read this going, I don't understand this. And I'm a veterinarian.
Exactly. And you can never fold it back up again once you unfold it.
Yes,
that's a package insert. And that's actually a different piece of the product labeling. The package insert is actually written for veterinarians. So it's in scientific jargon, veterinary jargon, and it's basically information about the drug. It gives the veterinarian a complete picture about the drug, and it gives the veterinarian the information that he or she needs in order to use the drug safely in their patients. Whereas the client information sheet is written in plain language, and it's in a question and answer format such that the owner can say, oh, my dog's having side effects. What are the side effects associated with NSAIDs? And they can go to that question on the sheet and find out what are the side effects. Or now what do I do? My dog is sick. Who do I contact? And it'll walk the owners through that as well. So they're very different pieces of labeling, but they both serve a very important function.
Now you were talking about that NSAIDs have the largest number of reported adverse side effects. Right. Is because they're some of the most dangerous medications, or because it is used so commonly?
Well, that's an interesting question. And part of it is because NSAIDs, just based on what they do and their action in the body, for instance, NSAIDs are created to block production of a chemical in the body called prostaglandins. But the body actually needs prostaglandins in order to function properly. For instance, to make sure your kidneys are working properly, to make sure your platelets are working properly, and to keep your stomach lining intact, because it's constantly bombarded with all kinds of acid. So you actually need prostaglandins in order to function properly. But prostaglandins are also associated with inflammation and pain and fever. So NSAIDs are chemicals that we take and our pets take in order to decrease the production of prostaglandins. So we're getting rid of the pain.
It's a balancing act, it sounds like.
It is. It really, really is. And so it's a true balancing act, and you're going to have issues at some time with NSAIDs, depending on the patient. For instance, if it's an older patient, if you have an older dog, it's very arthritic, but it also has other health concerns, you have to be careful using NSAIDs in those patients. And that's where the veterinarian's role is very, very important, because the veterinarian knows the patient, knows what's going on with the patient, and can determine, you know, is an NSAID safe for this patient? Should I give it every other day instead of every day? They can use their judgment and expertise to figure out what the best dosage and regimen is for each patient. But NSAIDs are also very, very commonly used in our patients, because we do have a lot of older dogs. They're very arthritic. They're also given post-surgery as well. So if your dog has been spayed or neutered, or it's had a broken leg that's been repaired, NSAIDs are also given to help decrease the pain after surgery. So there's a lot of cause for use of NSAIDs. And so with that, you're also going to see more reactions, because you have more drug going out there. It's being used in many, many more patients.
If a pet owner were to see, boy, just something's different, maybe it's vomiting, maybe it's diarrhea, or my pet just doesn't seem right, and you know your pet better than anyone else,
right,
what should they do if they suspect that there's an adverse drug reaction?
If there's an adverse drug reaction, or a side effect, if you will, and it doesn't matter if your pet's taking an NSAID or if it's on an antibiotic or some other kind of medication, the first thing a pet owner needs to do is call their veterinarian and say, look, I think something's wrong. I think my dog's having a problem. And contact your veterinarian. After you contact your veterinarian, you can report that reaction either to the drug company itself. Usually there's a 1-800 number on the label of the approved product, and people can call the company and report this to the company. And I know people say, well, I'm afraid to, because I don't think the drug companies will send that to you, FDA, and I'm worried nobody will hear about it. Well, drug companies are actually required to submit reports for their drugs every so often. So if it's a newer drug, they have to submit reports every 6 months for the first 2 years, and if it's an older drug, maybe they submit reports on their drugs every year. Regardless, one of the things that they have to submit with those reports is all the adverse drug event reports that they've gotten for that particular product over that particular length of time by law. So
somebody is really paying attention, which is, I think,
somebody
what
is paying attention. Correct.
Mind at and, ease, but
right. And I tell people sometimes, if they don't feel comfortable contacting the drug manufacturer, they can most certainly report it to us, and we actually have a page on our website that walks people through how to report an adverse drug reaction. And it's very detailed, and the owner can report it, or the veterinarian can report it as well. And it's very important too, I guess, along these lines, it's important to note that really, of all the adverse drug reactions that are happening out there, maybe 1% are ever reported to CVM. And until people report adverse drug events, we don't know that there's a problem with the product. So we really try to encourage people to report adverse events, even if it's something as simple as my dog is vomiting on the product. It may seem not that important and the dog got better, you know, 2 days later after you stopped the medication, but we need to know, because if we don't know, we can't address the situation and we can't see if there's a wider problem occurring.
So, Dr. Stamper, is it just adverse drug reactions that CVM is concerned with? How about pet foods?
Well, that's good that you brought that up, too. We actually have a page on our website where people can report problems with pet food as well. Since the melamine problem in 2007, we've developed a way to capture problems with pet foods. And again, owners can report issues with their pet food. Veterinarians can report issues as well. So there, now we have a place to capture information about adverse drug reactions, but now we have a place also to capture problems with pet food. And people do follow up with this information. The information just doesn't go into a black hole and disappear. We actually follow through with it. We monitor the information we get to see if there are any trends occurring that we need to be concerned about and need to address. So people are always monitoring the data that we receive.
So this sounds like a Washington governmental agency that really does care and really follows through.
We try. We do our best.
It must be because it has veterinarian in the title of it, veterinary medicine, and we're special people. But of course, I'm slightly prejudiced. Dr. Stamper, this has really been very eye-opening for myself, and I hope the listeners also. Going again to your site, and I loved your animal health literacy page. Some really great information. Anything else that pet owners should be aware of? What Food and Drug Administration and the Center of Veterinary Medicine does for the pets and people?
Just, we want people to know that we are here for them, that we are here to protect people, and we're here to protect animals. And if you have a concern with a product that we regulate, whether it's a drug, an animal feed, or an animal device, please don't hesitate to contact us. If you go to our website, we actually have a number that you can call, and we also have an email address that you can email. And people do return phone calls, and people do return emails that we receive here at the center.
Well, Dr. Stamper, thank you so much. Organizations such as yours really help pet owners be the best possible pet owners they can be and have the healthiest pets possible. So thank you so much. Thank you, listeners, for your time. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information for you. And Mark, our wonderful producer, thank you for all your efforts. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.